Did you see that Lakers-Pistons brawl last night? Well, old-timers might be saying that's nothing compared to the Celtics-Lakers of yore. Back in the 80s, when NBA stars still wore Converse All-Stars, flew commercials, stayed in musty Holiday Inns. Then a group of young upstarts led by Magic Johnson and Larry Bird changed the game forever. Larry and a merry band of trash-talking teammates put together by dynasty maker Red Auerbach, romping to three championships.
There's Bird again. Larry Bird with a steal. Henderson back to Bird. Beautiful.
Courtside, 29-year-old fledgling sports writer Dan Shaughnessy, who, no offense, Dan, looked a little like a big orphan Annie with his curly red hair. The players called him Scoop. They alternately respected and resented this Boston Globe writer. He's now written about that glorious time, shooting baskets with Larry Bird, watching his newborn daughter get passed around a plane by world champion Celtics. His book is Wish It Lasted Forever, and Dan joins us by Skype. Dan, things are different today.
The moat has gotten really wide with NBA stars, and they connect to fans on their own. But in the old days, the Stone Age, when dinosaurs and myself and Larry Bird roamed the earth, sure, we were together all the time. Buses, airport lobbies, waiting for bags together, hotel bars. That's when we did our best work. Not always pleasant. It was sometimes awkward. I mean, Larry Bird, as you say, they called me Scoop. And when I'd walk into the locker room, Larry'd say, Scoop, do you ever notice how quiet it gets when you walk in here? And that was okay. They didn't trust me entirely, and I didn't want them to.
And by the way, I'm kind of sorry, except I just realized when I saw this whole picture that you really did look like a big little orphan Annie with your curly red hair. We'll have it.
Napoleon Dynamite, too. Don't forget Napoleon Dynamite.
But, you know, saying, wow, it gets quiet was mild. I mean, this was a trash-talking team.
Robert Parrish hated me. No one could figure out why. And I went back to Cedric Maxwell. I said, Max, what was that all about? He said, Chief just had a disdain for your ass. Well, what are you going to do with that? And they trash-talked their opponents more than anybody. When the Lakers played them in 84, I think you read a lot of those games. I mean, the Lakers probably had a better team. Kareem, Magic, James Worthy. But the Celtics got in their heads. ML Carr would go pounding on the Lakers clubhouse door and say, get out here, you L.A. fakers. Come on out here, Tragic Johnson. You know, Max would be giving the choke sign to James Worthy at the free throw line. They would tell you they were going to beat you and then go and do it. And they didn't care.
And Larry would tell players what he was going to do. Sure. And he did it.
He was ridiculous, Robin. Larry Bird, I don't know. Sometimes it was like he was playing at another level. He saw the game in slow motion and he could hold things in his head while he was out there. Like he was banking three-pointers in New York during practice one time. And the Knicks trainer, Mike Saunders, said, what are you doing with that? He says, you couldn't do that in a game. And he says, well, if you give me $5, I will. Late in the game, the Celtics are routing the Knicks. Bird banks a three-pointer, runs by the Knicks bench with his greedy hand extended, looking for the $5 bill. I mean, he was thinking about that while he was playing. You know, Larry used to come out and warm up in the old gym, the dark Boston Garden. And he'd come over and say, Scoop, what are you up to? I'd said, Larry, you got a free throw streak going. Calvin Murphy's got the NBA record, 88 in a row, and you're in the 60s now. So I'm writing about your free throw streak for the early edition of the Globe. Don't make me look bad by missing in the first half. So sure enough, he gets fouled in the first half, goes to the line, makes the first one. He looks over and winks at me before making the second one. He was thinking about what we had talked about before the game while he's playing a game. Who does that?
Well, I was surprised to find out you did talk to each other. Dennis Johnson dribbles down in one scene and he yells over and says, hey, stop talking about Larry Bird. We have a game going here. All this stuff we don't hear.
I remember one night in Utah, Larry had a triple-double and he had 9 steals. So you could get a quadruple-double, which never happens. There's only been a couple in NBA history. Came out of the game in the third quarter because they were leading by so much. I ran down to the other end where he was sitting on the bench. I said, hey, get back out there. You could get a quadruple-double. It's only been done like twice in the history. He said, get the hell out of here, Scoop. I don't care about that. Again, you could just run up to him and talk to him during the game. Mm.
And here when they told an opposing player, here's what I'm going to do. Here's the play. Here's exactly what I'm going to do. And then he would do it. Look, you mentioned Robert Parrish, his wife, Nancy Parrish. He might have hated you. His wife hit you with her pocketbook. but take us back. You made one rookie mistake in the beginning. You're in the same bar. There's Larry Bird and Quinn Buckner sitting, you know, watching TV at the end of the bar. You send over a couple of beers, and then you send over a second round of beers.
Yeah.
Ooh, wince.
Yeah, it's hard to even think about that. It was hard writing it. I still turned beet red thinking about it. It violated every drinking code of man. Larry rejected the second round, and I asked Quinn Buckner about it. 37 years later, he said, I can tell you what that was. He didn't want to be beholden to you. He didn't want to owe you. He was smart then. He's smart now. And he was not going to let the new guy think that we could be bought off. And he was right. It was the most rejection I'd felt since my first high school dance.
Take us back to when Larry Bird first came to Boston. And I did get to do the first television profile of Larry Bird. And I remember we went downtown and he was wearing these huge Oshkosh B'gosh coveralls, you know, and looking at all the stoplights and marveling. And he said, you know, at home in French Lick, Indiana, we only have one stoplight. And he meant it. You know, he was in awe. And that kind of added to that hick from French Lick label. But that was so wrong, that label.
Well, he was shy and he did not trust strangers. He grew up very poor, but he was street smart and it really served him well. He was never going to be sophisticated, but he noticed everything. When you travel together, he was the instigator. He noticed little feuds between the writers. Or I got hit in the head during warm-ups one time by a Portland Trailblazers, Aaron Pass, and he's down the other end warming up, but he saw that. He couldn't wait to run me down the bar that night and say, "Scoop, I saw you get hit in the head. You was pissed." But when he came to the league, Rob, in 1979, NBA was in trouble. You know, 17 out of 23 teams were losing money. The NBA finals were broadcast on tape delay. They weren't even prime time. It was small time, and we were staying in Holiday Inns. There was a vending machine next to the rusty old pool downstairs. Snowflakes were coming through the cracks of the windows. It was not the NBA of the five-star hotels and the charter aircraft, all that. And Larry and Magic kind of brought the league into prominence. And then Michael Jordan came in 84. David Stern took over as commissioner. And by 1992, the Dream Team in the Barcelona Olympics is a global entity, and the league has never looked back.
You talked to Cedric Maxwell. And some of those conversations, by the way, are heartbreaking. He first called Larry disdainfully when he knew he was coming, the Great White Hope. But within a day of seeing him play, he told his black friends, you know, this guy could be the best ever. But there's a lingering whiff from Cedric Maxwell that, you know, there was racism going on. It was called the White Team. How did this group gel? I mean, you could have a Larry Bird, but people have to recognize that they have a Larry Bird and play their role. So how did that happen?
I think Red was really good at assembling rosters of guys that could work together. Cedric Maxwell, he was the man, but then they draft Larry Bird, and Cedric Maxwell's got to realize he's not going to be the man anymore. He took that. Robert Parrish, again, would have been the star player on most teams. He's got to subjugate his ego, but he got a lot of great passes in traffic to get easy dunks because he was playing with Larry Bird. And you're right about Max. Max didn't think white guys could play. He says this in the book. And then he comes to the Celtics and Max says, "God's a funny God, because he not only gave me the greatest white player of all time, he gave me two of the greatest white players of all time."
Those two being Bird and Kevin McHale.
Yeah, on the same team. And they took away his doubts right away. You read some of these quotes from Bill Walton. It's just elegant prose. Bill said, "The Celtics saved his life. It was the greatest year of his life." He talks about the parking attendants and the Mass Pike toll takers and how everyone was all about one and the greatest team of all time at the same time.
Bill Walton, who took some dirt from Larry Bird's childhood driveway in Indiana and sprinkled it on his body for strength. I guess what you're saying is, I mean, they trash talk like crazy. They had names for each other. As tough as they were on you, they were on each other.
They were secure in their own greatness. You didn't have that fragile ego or needing to make more money than the next guy, needing to get more shots, score more points. And when they practiced together, it was very competitive, but it was fun. And I think it's because they all knew how good they were, and they weren't threatened by other good players. That's a magical combination when you can achieve that, and Red Auerbach assembled that.
Yeah, I want to listen to some sound. This is 84-85. Larry Bird tells you and everyone, Michael Jordan is going to be the best that ever played. But he still, Larry, has still got it. And we come to the fallaway shot that he makes to win the game against the Portland Trailblazers, you know, on a buzzer beater. Here's announcer Johnny Most.
Bird up fakes. Bird takes the shot. It's gone! It's gone! Oh, my goodness! I can't believe it! It is gone from the corner! Oh, my! What a magnificent finish to this ballgame!
Oh, my gosh. I miss him so much. And then everything changed. The league exploded. NBA players were kept sort of isolated from the public. At one point, a Celtic spokesperson says, "Well, actually, we don't need the press anymore. We don't need you. You know, we have ticket sales." So, you know. But in writing this book, you obviously contacted so many of these people years, decades later. Many of them said, "Wow, you were so annoying."
Because, yes.
But what's it like now?
Yeah, there's some really lovely passages where, like, I know Kevin McHale talks about this, just that he said, whenever I see those guys now, it just I get a glow inside me. It just lights up. These are 60-year-old men now. It was a special time. And I know for me, even if athletes didn't like you in the hard days when you're covering and it's critical stuff and everything's kind of, you know, nerve ends are exposed. But later on, 30, 40 years later, when you interact with them, you remind them of really good times in their life when they were young and everyone knew what they were doing. They tend to really embrace that and be glad to see you.
I think it was Rick Carlisle who said to you, you named the book Wish It Lasted Forever because that's what Bill Walton said to you. He said, if you had any guts, I'm paraphrasing, you should name it I Wish They Would Lose. Yeah. Be critical.
But... I told that to Cedric Maxwell. I said, yeah, Carlisle says I should have called this I Hope They Lose. And Max said, well, that wouldn't be a party starter for the book, I guess. But we were thinking it because you didn't want to keep writing the boring old Celtics win again.
Boston Globe sports columnist Dan Shaughnessy. His book is Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics. Dan, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.